Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So we've been talking about the China situation, well, you know, all week. The tariffs, good thing, bad thing, something we should be pursuing. I've said from the beginning, I've been a supporter of using tariffs as a last resort. It's an arrow that has to be in the quiver. Something that once you get to the end of the road, and I would argue we've been at the end of the road with China for a very long time, and it's about time. And look, I've said from the beginning, not a Trump supporter by any stretch of the imagination, but even a blind squirrel eventually finds a nut. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on with China, the Trump policy, and what maybe we should be doing differently if tariffs are not the answer. That's why I've asked Andy Green to come talk with us. Andy's the Managing Director of Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress. Andy, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So let's jump right to it. Tariffs, good thing, bad thing in this situation?
You know, like any economic tool, it's neither good nor always good nor always bad. And in this case, I think there's going to be some pain involved. But the question really is the sacrifice worth it? And that's an area where I think we've got a lot to talk about.
No, absolutely. And look, I've said all along, I'm in support of using tariffs to do something to bring our trade imbalance in line. But Trump just, to me, is the wrong guy. I fear that he is going to make things immensely worse.
Well, let me add a couple of data points. Look, the impact of the tariffs to date has not been enormous on a national level. About 0.7% of GDP by some studies, you know, which is, again, 0.7%. And so it's just modest at the moment at the national level. Now, in regions or certain sectors, such as agriculture, much more intense impact. So certain folks are feeling the pain. They've been feeling the pain for a while. But the question is, though, as the tariffs ratchet up more economy-wide, how much will that start to be felt? We honestly don't exactly know the answer to that, because we haven't dealt with the situation for a very long time. Economists do say that tariff costs are passed directly on to the buyer, the American people.
Which I actually don't agree with 100%.
I don't fully agree with it either, because, you know, it really goes back to certain aspects of competitiveness. You know, there's also a lot of other things going on. So this is where I would go back to the point about both farmers and the consumers. We have a growing problem of monopoly in this country. And so the pain that farmers are feeling from thin margins and whatnot, you know, the tariffs are certainly insult to injury, but really it's the underlying pain of agricultural concentration that has left them with very limited power. Their wages and their earnings are being dramatically squeezed. The same thing is true for consumers, where, you know, there's just insufficient competition, growing monopoly power across the economy. And if we had a more competitive economy, it's not clear to me that the tariffs would be felt in exactly the same way.
No, excellent point. But, you know, at the end of this, the thing that I'm tired of hearing is, you know, the consumers are going to be squeezed. It's the consumers, this consumer focus. And I keep coming back to the reality that before we're consumers, we're workers, because eventually you have to earn the money to become consumers. So if we don't have jobs, and if those jobs that we do have are paying poverty wages, what good is it to have cheap products if you can't afford them?
Oh, I completely agree with that. There are national security components involved with whether we have supply chains in America. You know, we have all sorts of different things that raise or lower costs a little bit throughout the economy for different segments. And so I think this is a question of values. You know, this goes way back, actually. These battles go way back. After World War II, the New Dealers, having fought back fascism, having, you know, staring down communism, realized that they needed to make sure that they had a middle class in America and in our key allies, France, the UK, Germany, Japan, etc. And so that's why they set in place a whole bunch of things domestically here in the New Deal, but they also put in place a vision of a global trade regime embodied in then it was the Havana Charter that, you know, lower tariffs to integrate these economies and help them rebuild after World War II. But it also included fair labor standards, anti-competitive, anti-monopoly provisions, links to currency manipulation so that you couldn't have one player radically altering what everybody else was doing on a currency field. those things were all defeated by the Chamber of Commerce and the very monopolists that didn't like them.
Right.
And so we ended up with a regime that only was laissez-faire, only cut tariffs, and lo and behold, 80 years later, the American middle class and workers have been feeling pain ever since.
No, you're absolutely right, and I've had conversations with people about we need another Bretton Woods Accord. We need to divvy up the world. And go, how can you do that when you have a one actor who will lie, cheat, and steal? I mean, honestly and truthfully, what China has done over the last 20 years is basically lie, cheat, and steal away our manufacturing base. And we've got CEOs in this country who look at cheap labor as heroin. I mean, they're addicted to cheap, exploitable labor, and they're willing to give away the baby, the bathwater, the company. They're willing to give it all away for short-term profit just to exploit that cheap labor. And it's mind-blowing to me, Andy.
Well, I completely agree with many of those things, and it goes back to there's a number of forces at play. Some of them are very powerful, and some of them are entirely supercharged by policy decisions that were made. And at a minimum, the policy never took into account known things that could impact them and improve things in another direction. So, for example, what do I mean? In the transition towards telecommunications and communications technologies and tools that allowed globally mobile capital, there would be clearly ability to access labor in new pools around the world.
Right.
Similarly, as the Berlin Wall fell, as China opened to the world, you had new pools of labor that would be available. Yet, there was no effort to take into account what could be done from a labor perspective to boost the bargaining power of labor against those known downward pressures.
So are you saying that maybe we need to go back to capital controls and strict borders?
I'm saying what we have to do capital controls is something that has been that the IMF used to hate for years. But now, widely recognized as part of the I've got a kid in the background. I apologize.
See, he wants capital borders too, man. I mean,
I know. So they're widely recognized by the IMF as key tools to prevent financial instability. I think we need to be looking at these types of tools that, for 30 years, the Washington Fed has said were realized key tools to help protect the middle class against some of the pressures of global capital.
Right. Because, again, I keep coming back to, I think back to the Bretton Woods Accord in that era where, there were the forces that pushed for the dollar to be the reserve currency. And a lot of this, to me, is the fact that the dollar is the reserve currency, that we're getting so badly beaten because China's cheating on that as well, as are other countries, too. I think back to one of the things Keynes wanted, which was a basket of currencies that you would punish countries that had massive surpluses, and it would benefit countries that had, like us now, massive deficits. And there's part of me that goes, maybe we need to start talking about something like that.
Absolutely. I think that we need to be looking at understanding the role of the reserve currency, and we need to be putting in place policies to deal with it. I think it's going to be hard. We actually have a shared currency in the IMF special drawing rights, but it's not really been used very well. The key, though, is to recognize the impact of these things and then firmly put in place policies such as that would raise labor standards, raise organizing power, deal with the environmental race at the bottom, deal with the subsidies. And, we need to recognize that what did we do to counter inflation in the 1970s? We raised interest rates, exactly. Put tremendous pressure on the manufacturing companies that and that also makes it easier to invest in China because the dollar is very strong.
Yeah.
So knowing that, we completely fail to recognize the known outcomes, the known consequences, and put in place, at a minimum, start to push back the pain being felt across America.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Last question I've got for you because, the left is losing their mind over the fact that Trump's doing this. And, look, I've been talking about it for years here on the program, that we need to do something to bring China in the line. I've been talking about currency manipulation. I've been talking about the lying, cheating, stealing, all of that. And every administration, this isn't just, Obama, it wasn't just Bush, it was all of them, wasn't Clinton, it was, well, partially, mostly Clinton's fault. But you know, I've been saying for the longest time, we need to do something. And the fact that Trump is at least on some level trying, has the left, you know, almost hair on fire because it's him doing it. Do you see anything positive coming out of, because again, my fear is he's touching it, it's going to get boogered up. But do you have any hope in this, or is this going to be another failure?
The way I look at it is when you have bribe, you know, I used to work for an Oregon senator, and this is a place that had a lot of forest fires. When there's a lot of dry brush, which is what the working class had been under the gun for 30 years, you're going to have forest fires. And forest fires are extraordinarily destructive. They burn forests and they destroy homes and, you know, lots of pain. But it's also, in some ways, a part of the regeneration. And the key is to make sure that the forest fires, you know, are contained or have a clear way to burn, and then you regrow the forest.
Right.
I didn't vote for it. I firmly worked as hard as I could against having Donald Trump as president. But you know what? The American people said there's dry brush, there's going to be a forest fire. And so at this point, we need to make sure that that fire burns out in a way that doesn't char us in too great a way. And in doing so, you know, he stirred the pot on trade on China and forced people to face the real challenge that working class Americans have been feeling. And if that's the end result, that's what green should the country need. Now, it's still very dangerous. We don't know that we're going to get there yet, but
yeah, we will see. Andy, I appreciate the time. Always great talking with you. And I'm sure this is not going to go away. It's something I'd love to have you back on to talk a little bit about more as this continues. Again, Andy Green, he's the managing director there at the Economic Policy. It's director of economic policy at the Center for American Progress. You can check out their work at AmericanProgress.org. We'll get links out on how you can check out some of the great work they're doing there. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.